Hey there, my name is Elzy, the mayor of Podcast Town. Are you wanting to launch your own podcast show just like the one you're listening to right now? Our team helps launch, manage, and grow podcast shows for B2B brands just like yours. If you want to show up, hit record, and have a team that does the rest for you, head over to podcasttown.net or you can send us a text 262-278-0535. Just make sure you mention you're a friend of Josh's. And we'll get your free strategy call. Once again, that's podcasttown.net, or you can text us at 262-278-0535. Have an amazing day and enjoy this episode.
Hey, good day, fellow dealmakers. You know, after doing this 1,000 times, you would think that I get my, like, the stutter or the misstart. But no, this is a part of the journey of being a deal maker and being a podcaster is just going through it. And I wanted to say, good day, fellow deal makers. But I screwed that up. But we're gonna move on from this. And I just want to show you guys the mission and purpose of the show. Out of all the cool things you guys are going to learn about deals and special purpose acquisition companies, lemonade stands and flipping land and buying and selling crap, like out of all of this, the mission and purpose of our PR firm and everything we do is to put people together. All right. So our guest, you get access to our guest. Their contact information will be in the show notes. As you guys are hearing in the audience, hearing cool people beyond my stutters and my mistakes, if you hear someone that's cool and you want to connect with them, their contact information will be in the show notes. Connect with them, do a deal and be like, hey, I heard you on the Deal Scout. That's the mission and purpose of the show. So with that, we go out into the community and we look for cool types of deals and cool types of deal makers. And then we want to share their story here. All right. So with that, we brought on Pete to talk to us a little bit about what he does in the world of land flipping and investing in land and developing in real estate. So super interesting to me and I wanted to learn more. So might as well record it and share it with you guys. So Pete, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Josh. Great to be here.
Yeah, man. It's good to
See. Your intro was great. I don't know, you know, we're all not perfect, especially me. So
yeah. Well, you sound great. We were talking mics beforehand. And you're about to can I talk about your upcoming thing that you're about to launch?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So you're about to launch a podcast show, and I love talking with other podcasters and people in the world. Like tell us a little bit, cast some vision. What will it look like?
Yeah, it's called Turning Profit, and it's myself and it's my wife, Heather, and she's been my partner in marriage and in our business for over 20 years now. So we've learned a lot along the way, and this podcast is pretty much exclusively focused on real estate investing, different models, trying to get in deep on various aspects and ways you can make money with real estate investing. We'll do a lot of content regarding land investing, which is what we do as our primary business. So we'll get into that really deep as well. But just looking to get out there. And we've been talking about doing a show for quite some time. Finally is coming to fruition.
Why? What was the day that the light bulb went on and you're like, hey, we should have a podcast show? Like, what was that?
Well, it was Heather. Heather has always been on me about that. She's always listened to a lot of podcasts. I was kind of a late adopter on listening to podcasts. And now I listen to many, but, so she was always a big fan of podcasts and she's like, I think we would do really well on one and we have a lot to share and, you know, it would be a lot of fun. So she's been harassing me for a while and we've been talking about it and, it just kind of this year, the stars sort of aligned and I brought on a team that's going to be producing it for me. Cool. And then I brought on an assistant that helped me kind of organize a lot of things that now it's actually going to happen. We're going to launch at the beginning of the year. So I don't know when this will air, but
it's coming soon.
Yeah, pretty soon.
Yeah. So you guys are expert land flippers and real estate investors. Kind of give us an idea of what you guys do day-to-day basis.
Yeah, pretty much. My day is at least Monday through Friday is when I get in front of my computer. I've got a team that helps me out with pretty much all aspects of the business at this point, but I'm just kind of reviewing potential deals that we've got coming in, deciding if it's a good match for us, if we may need to renegotiate or basically if it's a good property that we want to buy. So I do those kind of high level approvals. And also seems like a lot of my time is spent sort of putting out mini fires and kind of making sure deals get closed and purchases get done and all those kind of things that fall between the cracks that you know, the business owner has to do, I guess.
Sure. And you talk about you're doing this with your wife and you've been married, you know, greater than 20 years and you guys are business partners and working through things. Like, talk to us about the dynamics of being married to someone that you're doing business with.
Right. Yeah. So it's really worked out well for us over the years. First of all, we get along really well. And we know at this point, you know, when something's important to me, she realizes that and it's important to me and she'll kind of back off, at least, you know, if she has an opinion on something. And the same with her. She's really adamant about something. I know when to say, hey, you know, we'll go with it. So we don't have a lot of arguments or, you know, any sort of disputes like that. We've kind of figured out like what our lanes are and we each kind of stay in our own lanes. And then kind of the bigger picture decisions we collaborate on. And if one of us feels really strongly one way or the other, then, you know, we kind of go with that. So yeah. It's been great. I mean, she does kind of the back end side of things. You know, she's really the handles all the money, bookkeeping, all the kind of back end administrative stuff that needs to happen for a business. And then I'm pretty much on the front end of it, finding deals, you know, working with all the properties, everything that needs to happen with that.
Yeah. So you're kind of the front, the tip of the spear, going out, making the deals, the visionary, and she's the integrator, keeping the business together, like making everything work.
Yeah.
Got it. So, as you guys are building this, you know, the family business, like give us an idea of like, how did you guys get started in this world of, you know, land flipping and buying this kind of stuff? Like, how did that start for you?
We've been involved in real estate, I guess you could say, since about the year 2000 when we bought our first home. And it was like a lot of other people, we bought our home and we ended up doing pretty well on it just because we held it a couple years and the market appreciated a little bit. So we made like $50,000 and we were like, this is great. You know,
this is that again.
Yeah, I know. So we, you know, we bought it for 200, I think sold it for 265, but you know, we ended up with 50,000 after it was all said and done. And we kind of got hooked a little bit. We were like, can it be this easy? We'll just buy more houses and do this more times. We bought another house, kind of a more expensive house, fixed it up a little bit, resold that one. Then we started flipping homes. So we got really into that. And that was before the real estate crash in the, you know, 2007 through 2009 period.
Yeah.
So flipping homes was great for a while there. And then when the market crashed, it wasn't so great. So it kind of shifted. I mean, in the meantime, I had gotten my broker's license out here in California. So I started after the market crash, Heather's like, hey, you should get into bank-owned properties, you know, like selling REO listings. So I got really heavily involved in that. Those things were still selling. Even at the worst market crash of all time, pretty much, it was like a feeding frenzy for those properties. Sure. From investors. So it's not like things weren't selling. It's just that the prices like reset overnight much lower. So that was a major issue. But, you know, thankfully she was kind of integral in that and kind of, you know, telling me that I should be shifting towards that. And I did. And that worked out great for a while. Then as part of that, I kind of got hooked up with a bunch of different large investment companies. So then I was, you know, I kind of shifted towards finding deals for them and just bringing them as many deals as I could find, and they would close on them as cash. It was no drama. It was easy. And I love working with investors because I understand that mindset. But then we sidetracked and we got into another business that was my wife was pretty much the focus of that. So it's called It's a Lovely Life. And it was basically teaching people how to start blogs and travel blogs. We were traveling as a family like 150 days out of each year.
Wow.
As a family of five. So that was kind of all consuming. And that was a great business, and it still is a great business. You know, training people how to kind of do that themselves. And we did that for a number of years, and we built that into multi-million dollar business per year. But we got the itch to kind of get back into the real estate game. I'd still have my broker's license and everything, but I wasn't doing anything active. I wasn't dealing with any clients. I wasn't buying any deals because we were completely focused on that aspect of things. And then, you know, kind of read some stuff. I knew I wanted to get back into investing. I just didn't know kind of what I wanted to get involved in again. And I was reading some stuff online, saw some stuff about people flipping land where they were, you know, it was just kind of anecdotes I was reading. Hey, I bought this property for $10,000. I sold it for $30,000. I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool. That's a great return on investment. And I was kind of telling Heather about that. And she's like, oh, I think you'd be good at that too. So I decided, well, I'll just buy a training program on it. And I did. And kind of I went in, you know, I learned everything I could about how to evaluate these properties and what is specifically the business model is and how to get the leads coming in and pretty much every aspect of it that, you know, needed to get figured out. And then I just started sending out as much direct mail as I could. Nice. So, and then one thing led to another. And then this year, this is our second year in the business. We're on track to do somewhere in between $3.7 and $4 million in revenue. And that's about a 50% gross profit margin on those as well. So
what kind of gross margin?
About 50%. So on average, when we're buying a property, we try to double it. So we buy a property for $50,000. We try to sell for $100,000.
Wow. So, good for you guys. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Let thanks.
Yeah. You're welcome. Hey, listen, you don't need my validation. You know, you do not need my approval. You're doing it and you've got your family behind you. Out of all that stuff, like I love all of it, but the thing that sounds like the most adventurous, the coolest thing is like a family of five. I've got a family of five and a dog. So like 5.5, I guess.
Yes.
But like I loved, like we bought a camper and we did a little bit of, you know, just small travel and such like that. But like, that was a part of our life plan. God had different plans for us, but a part of our life plan was to do a little bit of traveling. Like, how did you guys make that work? So it's a lovely life. Like,
yeah.
Could you give me some insider tips on like how you guys did to make that work on raising a family and traveling and making money?
Exactly. Yeah. It was a really interesting period of our lives for sure. And we still love to travel. We still travel probably way more than most people do.
Yeah.
But not to that level. I mean, it all started because my wife had started a blog and I don't know, it was like 2010, 2012. And at first she was focused on, you know, a blog about saving money. And she really liked that aspect, tips for saving money. And then it kind of evolved into more of a, you know, she was just writing about everyday life, you know, about kids and, you know, just lifestyle type topics. And then she got invited on some trips, or we got invited on some trips, and then that kind of snowballed. Yeah. And that's when the kind of travel blogging thing took off. And you know, I haven't counted them for a while, but the last time I counted, it was something like 80 travel blogging trips that we went on. And when I say travel blogging trips, these are trips that like either we pitched for or like a destination like contacted us and said, hey, do you want to come out and create some content and feature us on the blog and or social media, whatever the case may be. And yeah. and then that was paid for. So so we went all over the world, you know, Europe, Hawaii many times, Mexico many times, like Caribbean, all over the place there. I mean, cruises. I mean, just many, many different things. So it was a great experience. And, you know, I think our kids will probably look back on that time frame as something pretty special as well.
Yeah, Pete, that's really cool, man. Before the interview, I said, are there any questions that I can't ask? And you're like, nah, dude, open book. Like we can share this kind of stuff. So, you know, what are for like influencers and, you know, bloggers and, you know, this thing, and my kids like love watching YouTube travel and like watching other families and such like that. But like some of that stuff, like, you know, they want to do it with me, but I'm a little nervous, and I'm sure that there's pros and cons for everything. When it comes to being, I want to be a loving father. I want to be a loving husband, and I want to be there for my kids, and I want to protect them and serve them and love them. What are some of the, you would say, Josh, if you're going to do this as a friend, like here's some things to look out for when it comes to being an influencer, because you guys have did it, rose to the top, made some good money doing it. What are some of the things that you could say, Josh, like be careful about this because this could get you? What are your thoughts?
Well, I I don't really have a lot of cautionary tales as far as that goes. I mean, I think the audience that we cultivated was pretty much family friendly type stuff. I mean, we did have some random wackos, you know, reaching out and saying stuff, but that was kind of few and far between. We, you know, Heather did a lot of stuff. A lot of her content was on her blog and she Instagram as well, but we had, you know, we posted all of our travel videos on YouTube, but we didn't really have many issues. My kids, we kind of raised them to be sort of very responsible with social media. So luckily we didn't have any of them that were kind of going off into like a dark tangent with the social media side of things. So they got it. They understood it. We always talked to them about those things. So I don't have really any cautionary tales. I mean, I'm sure that if you've got kids that have a personality type that they could go down a rabbit hole in social media and in some area you don't want them to go, then it might be good to keep some restrictions there. But
yeah, you're awesome. Thanks. So my daughter's a lot like me, right? Like I have in the past, like really, I've had to do a lot of work, but a validation and approval, and it felt really good. And I had a decent size, like following on whatever, doesn't matter. But I had to get rid of Facebook and I had to like cut back because for me, I found myself like the temptation of that to get my acceptance, approval and validation from the audience and the thumbs up and the likes. It was like a drug for me. And my daughter, I she's a lot like me. She's like my little twin. How do I protect her from that? Because I can't just say, hey, don't have this forever. I got to give her the tools. Do you mind if I ask you some parenting advice on the Deal Scout?
Yeah, I don't know how good my advice will be, but I'll try.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, I don't really know how to advise you on that. I mean, it's kind of, it's a tough, slippery slope, I guess you could say. Sure. I mean, social media is great in some ways, but it can also be like really damaging to kids and people. So... I don't, for me, I can just tell you from my experience and what, I'm the same way. I kind of like approval and it's addicting when you get approval from outside sources, but I just have to limit myself, you know, like I'm only going to be on here, you know, like a couple different times a day, I'll check in, something like that. But if you let yourself just kind of get all consumed by it, then, you know, I just try to keep my focus elsewhere. So I have very little time for it, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So that's good, man. So as you guys were building this, you guys, you know, what are some of the ways we'll get into all sorts of different types of deals in this conversation? Cause you guys are expert deal makers. You guys have learned to do that through media. You learned to do that through a brokerage, REOs, flipping, like you've done a lot of cool stuff in the terms of like this, It's a Lovely Life and what you guys have built there. Like, what are some monetization strategies for content creators out there that you guys have seen work really well and maybe some things that didn't work?
Yeah. Well, one of our big things was affiliate partnerships.
Yeah.
So we made about half of our revenue from affiliate partnerships. And when I say half of our, so we were, for a period of about 3 to 4 years, we were making over $2 million per year in revenue in just that business. And about half of that was affiliate income.
Wow. So cool.
So we took certain affiliates and really most of that affiliate income came from, you know, our business was about how to start a blog and showing people how to start the blog, but also become successful with it. And One of the big things in that business is the hosting, the website hosting that you can refer. And that's kind of the first step in the process. You got to get a host set up so you can get a blog started. So we made quite a bit of money from the hosting affiliate relationships. We had other affiliate partners as well that we did well with, but that was the great bulk of that. The other half of our income was from the courses and the programs and the training associated with that business as well. So we gave away a free course, and as part of that free course, you know, we encouraged our students to get their blog started through our hosting recommendation. That's where the affiliate income came through from there. And then we would just kind of offer as much kind of free, free advice and content and everything as we could. And then we would do periodic launches of training programs. So we had one that was kind of blogging in general, and then another one which was focused on travel blogging. So, yeah. And, you know, and then other income, before we got into kind of the training side of things, Heather was making about, she was averaging about $30,000 a month just on income from, you know, like, pretty much, corporate partners and things like that. Like mm-hmm. they'd pay her a certain amount for a blog post. They'd pay her a certain amount for Instagram posts. So there was a lot of that, and she was really heavily involved in that for some time. And then she kind of showed people how to do that themselves. So,
Man, the power of content, the power of sharing a story, a journey, and showing people how to, giving people tools, right? Giving even free, like giving people tools to do stuff. It builds trust, builds credibility, yep. authority, and then you can do deals with them, right? It's brilliant.
That's right.
Really nice job. And she was the brains of the, you know, from what I heard, you said a few times, and then, you know, Heather encouraged me to shift here, and Heather encouraged, and Heather's pushing me to build a podcast. Sounds like she's like the mastermind behind this all, Pete.
She is. She's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, kind of like pulling all the levers and stuff.
Behind every decent dude, there's a really incredible woman. Yeah. It sounds like that's what she is.
Yeah. Well, and I'm stubborn in a way. So she really has to, when she's really convinced on something, sometimes she has to. It takes a while for me to come around, but you know, she'll chip away at it until she gets me to.
She will get what she wants out of it.
Yeah. That's pretty much a given. Yes.
So Turning Profits is the name of the podcast that's going to be coming up, sharing your journey, your story, talking about different models that you guys have seen. Can't wait to listen in on that. When that does go live, let us know, and we'll push it in front of our people. But you've stumbled into this this thing of flipping land and investing in land, and you guys have created a multi-million dollar business. You got systems, processes, and people working for you to do it. Like, talk to us about that. What types of properties do you do and where, right? Like, is it close to home, or is it wherever? Like, give us that. What does that look like?
Yeah. So we're in Southern California, San Diego area, and we buy properties all over the country. And most of the properties we actually buy are on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been where our focus has been. We bought properties in a lot of different states, but we never actually go out to step foot on these properties. We have visited a few just on a road trip that we did last year. But aside from that, we never see the properties in person. I've got a whole team that kind of makes this all happen, but it all starts with direct mail. So we send out direct mail to these property owners, and we build lists. I use a company called DataTree, which is a first American company, but it allows you to basically pull property information from all over the country, and we can filter out specifically just for raw land properties. And we look for larger properties at this point, you know, at least, you know, kind of 5 acres was our minimum for a little while, but I've since bumped that up to at least 10 acre properties. And, you know, most of the stuff ends up being maybe an hour to 2 hours outside of a major city. And those properties are, you know, considered rural, and, you know, maybe don't have a lot of, you know, high-end development potential, but there are a lot of buyers looking for nice quality properties that are either some for recreational properties, or maybe something where they could build a home on there and just kind of have their own pieces of the world. And the prices are actually pretty reasonable, where it really makes sense and people see the value there, especially, you know, since we're getting internet access is going to be everywhere. So I think that's another thing that's kind of driving the fact that people are realizing that, hey, they can work from anywhere they want in a lot of cases, and they don't have to live in a city or commute to work every day.
Yeah.
So, a lot of those, that's kind of what we do. We look for those properties off market. So we're sending direct mail, and they're either calling us, they're emailing us, they're sending letters back. And then from that point, we, you know, see if we can work out a deal with each of those people. But it all starts, like, we actually send out an offer to these people, and we base those offer prices off of average sale prices in a particular area or county. And then we back off, you know, what we would need to buy it for in order for it to make sense for us. And we just shoot those offers out to them. and tens of thousands of letters per month is what we send out, you know, anywhere between 50 and 100,000 letters per month.
Wow.
And, yeah. So it's a lot of mail and a lot of activity going on. And, you know, it's about the deal, you know, each individual property, we've got to evaluate, you know, is it a good property? First of all, is it a property that doesn't have any issues or no major issues? And is it a property that people would want? And, you know, and then what would it take for us to put a deal together? Sometimes we're right on with our offer price. Sometimes when something comes back, you know, it's real estate, just like anything else. So that, you know, little sub areas have different values, and it's impossible to really figure that all out doing the volume that we're doing, you know, sending out the mail that way. So, you know, when something comes back, sometimes we're a little too low. Sometimes we were a little too high, but regardless, we get that conversation started and seeing if we can work out a deal with the property owner.
Well, you guys are keeping the United States Postal Service. You're keeping them in shape by, you know, running.
Yeah, definitely.
Holy moly.
You would think they would be happy with us, but I don't know. Maybe they're not. Maybe they don't like the extra work.
Who knows, right? The government. I can't understand them. Yeah. Holy moly. So how are you doing all right. So you're sending out, let's just say, 25,000 letters or direct mail. Like, how are you determining the value of 25,000 different properties? Or are you saying, hey, we're buying land in this area, $1,000 an acre, or whatever the case may be? Like, how are you doing that at scale?
Yeah, a lot of the counties that we send to are pretty defined. Now, I wouldn't say pretty defined, but at least we can come up with some decent averages or a decent guesstimate of what, you know, what the properties would be worth on average. So we're just looking at online tools like Zillow or realtor.com and kind of looking at the sales. You know, we'll pull up, you know, say the last 12 months in a particular county, anything from 10 to 100 acres and kind of what the average price per acre retail sales were. And then we back off a percentage. And like I said, we try to double our investment. So we try to buy a property and then double whatever our investment is. And so we just back off that percentage and then we put that in the offer. So say we've determined that retail pricing in a particular area is $3,000 an acre. You know, we might offer them $1,500 an acre. Mm. And then it's just a mail merge math thing. So, you know, 20 acre property would then be, you know, what is it? $30,000 or whatever, you know, so
yeah,
that we would offer them.
So they call back and they, you know, they're like, how dare you offer me this? Do you know my neighbor just sold for $1 million? And you're like, thank you for calling. Let's talk now. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've got a phone answering service that answers the phone all the time. And their kind of main job is to sort of filter out that, because we get, you know, a lot of people, I wouldn't say a lot, but there are people that call every time we send out a batch of mail and they're upset about the price that we offered them. And, you know, I can understand that from their perspective. You know, they have this idea in their mind what it's worth, and it may be worth that. I don't know. You know, like I said, we don't really look into these individual properties before we send out the offers. We're just kind of doing it based off of averages.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of those people are never going to sell to someone like us. They're going to want to retail the property, and the market will eventually tell them what it's worth. Not me.
Yeah. So as you guys are doing this, like you guys, you know, you create a mail merge thing. So it kind of like fills in the blank on how many acres, right? Because you could pull the property data. So how many acres times average sales price cut in half. And then that prints that on the offer letter, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's got their property parcel number, the county they're in, you know, some other basic stuff. First page is kind of a letter introducing us and why we're sending them a letter and what we do.
Yeah.
Second page is an actual purchase agreement. So they can either sign that, email that back, or text it back to us, whatever the case may be, or just call us back and see what we will work out.
Is that a legally binding offer?
It's not, you know, it's not signed by us. The offer is not signed by us when we send it out. So if they send it back signed, you know, obviously we know that they're serious and we look at it and see if we want to sign it too.
Okay. So then, so that gets the conversation going, right? So if they say, you send it to me and I'm like, hell yeah, that sounds awesome. I signed it, send it back. Right. And you're like, ooh, you know, 60% of that water, you know, land is underwater. We got to adjust. We still want it. But then you call them back and you say, what do you say when that happens? Right. Like you get the offer back.
Yeah. I've got an acquisition manager who her job is to just have all these conversations with the homeowners, either by phone or text, email. Yeah. But when we it first comes in, I have another lead manager that kind of inputs into our CRM and does some basic evaluations of the properties. So like you said, 60% of the property is underwater, or it's landlocked, or it's, you know, on the side of a mountain, you know, those types of things, we would have to adjust the price. And a lot of times those properties, we don't want them at all. It would just not make sense even really at any price. I mean, honestly, I probably could work out a lot more deals than I do, but I've really tried to focus on buying good properties. Because even if I get a property that's got issues, say it's, you know, on the side of a mountain or something like that, or it's got some sort of issues, even if I can get it really cheap and then put it on the market for really cheap, it's going to be a problem. I mean, I know that at this point. Yeah. And it's going to take more time, and it's going to distract me from other deals, which I know will be better for us in the long run. So
that's brilliant. So
You know, I bought a landlocked property one time, and that's kind of how I came up with this whole philosophy, because there's land investors that some of them will focus on just buying landlocked properties or problem properties of some sort. And I bought this like 12-acre property. It was like kind of in a major city. And it was kind of in the middle of this whole kind of subdivision area. And I was like, this is 12 acres. And, you know, I was able to buy it for like $3,000, you know, and just like a nothing price on it. You know, I thought, oh, I could easily just sell this for 20 grand or whatever the case is. And, you know, just put it on the market and it'll sell right away. But I did get a ton of interest. I bought it, closed on it. I knew it was landlocked. And I did get a ton of interest from people as soon as I put it on the market. And most of them did. Even I put everything in the description, it's landlocked. You could still access it. I mean, you still walk to legally allowed to walk to the property and access it, but you can't do anything with it. They can't build on it. You can't, you know, just kind of a recreation property. But I got so much response on that, and it just took months and months, and I just had to keep reducing it until I got someone that really got it and was interested. And I think I sold it for $5,000 or $6,000, and I still made money on it, but it just wasn't worth it. Yeah. And then after that, I kind of vowed, I'm not buying any more landlocked properties. So,
what would be, as you look back on that, you know, and you're looking and you're going, okay, here's where I make the mistake. So landlocked could be good if you could get, you know, easements, or if you could get, you know, if you're able to do something. But why did that property being landlocked restrict it from being built on? Like what could have been done differently, do you think, on this deal that went wild? I mean,
if I would, you know, if it was a better, more quality property, I would probably put some effort into getting some sort of legal easement. And maybe that's what the person that I sold it to ended up doing. But it had some other issues too. It's like this big gully in the center, is a very odd shape. And there was just a lot of things about it that kind of made it not ideal. But there's land investors that, that's kind of their strategy. They just pick up these landlocked properties for ultra cheap. And then their exit strategy is to try to pay off one of the neighbors to get an legal deed easement, or they are trying to sell the property to one of the neighboring properties.
Yeah.
So it makes sense in that situation. They can expand their property and they could probably pick it up for a pretty good price. But I don't like those, because it's kind of you're very limited on your buyer pool.
Yeah, you got eight buyers around you. Pick one, right?
Yeah, hopefully exactly. And if none of them want it, none of them have the money to buy it, if they're all going to kind of shut you down as far as, you know, being able to pay for an easement from them, then you're kind of stuck.
Was that property able to be subdivided?
No. If it had access, if it had legal access, then you would have been able to subdivide it.
Yeah. But the majority of the properties, as you guys are building the list and such, are you guys like checking on zoning? You're like, this is R1 property versus agricultural property or commercial. Like, how do you guys, what filters do you look for? I know I'm asking question. All the secret sauce.
Good question.
Good.
So that is a whole nother side of things. After we get a property under contract, it kind of sets off this whole chain of events with my team to start working on the due diligence. Now, first of all, we buy every single one of these properties through an attorney, title company,
sure,
escrow, you know, we do it legit because we don't want to make sure, we want to make sure that there's no problems when we go to resell the property.
Totally.
So the attorney, the title company, they're kind of working through the title issues, doing the title search, making sure everything's good there. But my team, like one of the first things we do is we order a photographer, drone photographer also, to go out to the property, walk the property, write up a little report on it, give us a bunch of images, and kind of just like get on the ground and see what the property's like. We also have a whole list of things that we do, like we call the city or county and, you know, go through all the checklist of items as far as, is it buildable? What are the utilities like? What is the zoning? Setbacks, like everything. We, you know, we've got a whole big checklist of stuff that we ask.
Yeah.
And then we also lean heavily on local broker partners. So we really try to establish those in specific in areas where we know we're doing a lot of business. So we'll, as part of the process, we'll ask them, you know, what do you think this property could sell for? What kind of concerns do you possibly have about, what do you think about the property? Is it going to be a tough sell? Is it going to stay on the market for a while? You know, what are your concerns? So we get their opinion. We bring them into the process. And then when we close on the property, they get the listing and we resell it with them. So, you know, we try to make it a win-win. So we're not wasting their time, and we want, you know, we pay good commissions. We pay, you know, generally 10% commission to the land brokers. So, you know, we try to make it a win-win. So the system all works like it should.
Yeah, that's great. So as you guys are doing this, how do you know, like we bought a piece of land one time and we went to go build on it. We're going through this whole process, you know, and we started digging and there's a gopher turtle or a endangered species. Everybody get off the property right now. And people had to come and dig. And like, it was a crazy amount to protect the turtle thing, you know, love animals. That's awesome. Whole project got shut down because of a, you know, some endangered species. Wow. How do you know when you guys are doing these things? And maybe this is my fear brain, my croc brain kicking in. And it's just like, how do I know I'm not going to get, you know, kicked in the nuts again like that in the future from an endangered species? Like, how do you guys know when you're buying that kind of land?
That's tough. I mean, I don't think I would have foreseen that issue. I don't think many land investors would have foreseen that issue. But, you know, oddball stuff like that comes up sometimes. Now, thankfully, I've never lost any money on any deals. So we try to buy them at the right price. And I like the property. I like the bigger properties because there's more than one exit plan. Yeah. There's more than one exit strategy. So on a 10-acre property, you know, there's always going to be interest from someone that's maybe looking to just have it as a recreational property. Maybe they're just going to drive four-wheelers on it, or and who knows what they're going to do. It could also be a place where they build a home or maybe even subdivide it, any of those things. But if we run into, sometimes with the building stuff, we try to eliminate as much of that stuff and potential roadblocks as we can as far as potential buildability of a property.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess sometimes things come up, but I do like the fact that if we're buying a property for the right price, then we can still sell it to, say, a recreational buyer, and they're going to be thrilled with the property and they don't even have any immediate plans to build on it.
Yeah, that's super cool. So as you guys are doing this, you said something and like my ears just perked. I'm like, holy moly, how do I learn how to do this? I've never lost any money on my deals.
Right.
Say that again.
Yeah. Yeah, I never lost any money on any of these deals. So,
oh my gosh, that's awesome, because I've lost a bunch of money. You know, like you do enough deals, you're going to lose money, but never losing, you know, and producing $3+ million in revenue. Like you have, and it's Heather's brain power, but you guys have stumbled upon like an incredible business model that started with you going, I want to get back into investing. I could do all sorts of this kind of investing, commercial, flipping. I've done it, right? But you said, let's do land.
Right.
When you guys were thinking this, besides Heather, you can't use Heather, you know, Heather's the brain power anymore. Right. How did you choose land flipping as your specific business model?
It just kind of made sense to me. The more I read about it, the more stuff I was kind of researching online. It was kind of like, it felt pretty low risk to me because you could buy properties, you know, as low as $3,000. That was my cheapest purchase that I ever did. I mean, there's some people that buy properties for $500 and they'll sell it for $2,500 with great return on investment. It's just hard to make a lot of money that way.
Yeah.
But, So I felt like it was pretty low risk. You know, we could start kind of slow and kind of figure it out. And I was confident with my experience that I could buy properties right, because I always focused on that. Like I feel like I've got a I don't know. I feel that's like one of my superpowers is like buying right. So I feel like I feel like I can do that. And I've always understood, you know, what it takes to buy right and what something is actually worth if presented properly. So I feel like I'd be good at that. So I just kind of, it just kind of made sense to me. And she was on board with it too. So I was like, oh, I'm going to try to make this work. And it just kind of started snowballing as soon as the first year we did, it wasn't even a full year. It was 2021. We resold our first property in March of 2021. And then for that year, we ended up doing over $1.2 million, about the same gross profit margin. So that was a good kind of partial first year. And then 2022, I was like, oh, I know I could do much better than that. I figured out some lessons along the way. So, you know, we're probably going to triple that for 2022. 2021 was the 1.2. And I want to triple it again for next year. But so it just, the business model made sense to me. Like I knew that you can drive as much business if you want, as you want, if you send out more mail.
Yeah.
So that's very easy for me. Like I can set up a mailing schedule and be like, okay, we're going to send 50,000 this month, 50,000 next month. Like I can be very consistent with that. I'm very good when it comes to that type of thing. So I knew that we could, if I could figure out how to evaluate properties, right?
Yeah.
In the land space that I was very confident we'd do well with it.
Yeah.
And the other thing I really liked about the business, honestly, is the hold times. Now, I had always kind of assumed that land was a long-term game. You know, you buy a property and you hopefully you're in the path of progress. And one of these days you're going to hit a home run on it. But, you know, it may take 10 to 20 years for that to come to fruition. But this model is really completely different. Our average hold time is 60 days. And
really?
that's the time that we actually close on the purchase of the property to the amount of to when it actually resold. So you know, it's a very quick hold time situation. So if you're kind of annualizing some of these returns, so say for instance, I bought a property for $20,000 and I sold it for $40,000 and some change. So I netted, you know, $40,000 out of it and I doubled my money.
Yeah.
And it was the average hold time, say 60 days. So that's 100% return in 60 days. And if you annualize that, you know, you could do that theoretically. If you kept that money moving, you could do that six more times in the course of a year. So, I mean, if you compounded it, those numbers would be astronomical. But if you just multiplied out like six times 100%, like if you did that every 2 months, I mean, you're looking at a 600% return on your money. It's crazy. So.
Jeez, I need an abacus to like figure out how much that is.
I don't know if it was easy for me to follow or not. To follow me or not. I was thinking in my mind how it all works. But.
I'm trying to like picture a pie graph and a chart and all this stuff, and I'm like, man, I need my 9-year-old daughter to reteach me how they do math now.
Yeah.
They do math different now. It's weird.
Yeah, they do.
I have to learn it again because I don't know how to do math. So you mentioned your superpower is the ability to buy right. In real estate, you make money on the purchase. Like that's where the real money is made when you buy right. Now, what would your superhuman name be? Like if you were a superhero, it can't be buy right. What would your superhero name be if you were one?
That's another good question, Josh.
I'll let you guys in on a secret. Pete and I are playing the game right now. So if I stump him and he goes, that's a good question. We have a donor advised fund that we invest in kingdom driven businesses and nonprofits and such like that. So I have a game with my guests going when they say that's a good question. They, you know, it could be a dollar. It doesn't matter. It's a game that we play. So just letting you guys in on the little secret we got going. But sorry, back to you. What would be your superhero name? We could come back to it if you want.
Yeah, I'm nothing's coming to my head. I don't know. I need to think of something good, not just throw out something crappy.
It's got to be something like
maybe it'll come to me
with like dirt or land or like parcel or who knows? We'll figure it out. To be continued, TBD on that.
Yes.
One. Have you ever considered like holding the notes on these guys after you buy them really right. And you know, like you find a neighbor and you're like, hey, I'll hold a note on it. $2,000 down, which covers the purchase price, or $10,000 down. And then I'll hold the note over the next 15 years. Have you ever done something like that?
I haven't done it personally, but there are some land investors. That's their entire business model. That's what they look for. They want the note portfolio. For me personally, I'd rather take my profits and reinvest it into buying additional properties. I think the money's going to compound a lot faster that way, and then take the profits and put it into other investments that are a longer term hold.
But
I have started working with another investor that's they want notes. So what they will do, like I can, when we go to resell a property, I can say, hey, owner financing available. It's not actually me that's going to carry it, but it's them that's going to step in. They're going to buy the note at closing at a discounted rate, you know, but it would still make sense for me to do the deal at that price.
Yeah. Super cool. Man, I was definitely going to ask you about the hold times. That's great. And it's you're pushing through local brokers and you're, you know, paying an incredible, you know, 10% for this. Like, so they're incentivized, like, let's get this thing. And then they're calling you up and they go, hey, let's get more. How do we get more? How do we get more? Right. Right?
Brilliant model.
Because if you try to do it yourself, you don't know the local industry. You don't know that you've got to jump through a bunch of hoops. You guys have mastered the art of acquisition, right? Yep. And that's good. And you're beating the local brokers to the deal, which is brilliant. Nice work.
I try to refer them business as well. You know, sometimes, you know, we may be talking to a home, a property owner, and they may say, you know, we may have offered them, for instance, $50,000.
Yeah.
And they may come back and say, oh, we need $75,000 to put the deal together, you know. And then I've talked to the broker, and the broker's like, you know, we could sell it for $100,000, but there's not enough spread for me really at that, you know, to buy it for 75 and sell it for 100. I mean, it would probably still work, but it leaves you, it's riskier, you know, for the unforeseen. And maybe you got the market a little wrong. So in those type of situations, what we try to do is connect the property owner and the broker and just say, hey, you know, we can't make that happen, but I bet you if you list this property with this broker, you know, this really good broker that we know, that he could probably get you that price. Yeah. So then we try to make that connection and see if they can do a listing. And I don't look for a referral fee or anything. I just try to, you know,
really?
Do that in the interest of
goodwill. Why not? Because you're handing over great deals. And I mean, you guys are experts in the affiliate model. And I mean, those could be 25% of, 5% of a $100,000 sale. I mean, that turns into, I can't do math. I don't have my abacus, but it could be a couple grand here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that, that we could get some income off of that, but I also feel like the goodwill that it builds maybe will be worth more.
Yeah.
It's kind of my theory.
Do you believe in karma or, you know, goodwill or like put it out in the universe?
Yeah.
When has that ever bit you in the butt as a deal maker?
I can't remember a time.
Man,
honestly,
never made money. Karma's never bit me. You must be a good dude.
I try to be. I tell my wife I am, but
but she's a brain power. She sees right through your shit.
I know. You know, I'll tell you. I don't know. I haven't had a lot of, you know, major issues or problems. I just try to do what's right, and you know, with all of my relationships with any of the vendors I deal with, or property owners that we deal with, I try to do the right thing, and it generally works out okay.
Yeah. Now you guys are influencers, you're investors, you're building some really great businesses. You got some sharp, you know, sense about you. You see stuff, whether it's on TikTok or YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook, fill in the blank, and you see a guru telling people how to, you know, invest or whatever. And you're like, I see through that. That's bullshit. Like, what are some things that you're seeing in the industry right now that you're like, maybe not for me, but here's how I would do it differently. Have you seen any of that? Do you have any examples that come to mind? And you don't, please don't call the person's name out.
Yeah, like, no.
I don't want any more hate mail. I get enough of that from my other shows.
I wouldn't call anyone out. I mean, I understand it from their perspective. I mean, they're, you know, especially from being in the business where we were doing the blogger training, it's kind of a similar thing in that they're generally selling a training program of some sort.
Yeah.
And And the ones that bother me are the ones that are clearly not doing what they're training about. You know, maybe they were doing it a little bit, but they may not have reached that kind of master level, which I think you kind of need to in order to really to really do a good job with the training side of things. So I think those are the ones that bother me, I guess.
Yeah. It's they're not eating their own dog food, right? Like they're selling it, but they're not doing it.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And I found myself, and I had to course correct where I was, you know, consulting or, you know, advising for companies. And then I looked back and I go, holy crap, I'm not doing this myself. And I'm like, I was like, man, we need to pause here and we need to eat our own dog food and then go back out and right. do it better for them. So yeah, I agree with you. When I see people, and you know, when I see people doing that, it bothers me because I think that there's a lot of good-willed people out there who want to succeed in life and create some investment money so their kid could get braces or whatever, fill in the blank.
Right.
And I agree with you. You and I are aligned there.
I think as long as you're kind of, if you're doing your training program or anything kind of based on the fact that like, here's what I do, here's what works for me, here's the model. Not like what you should do. Like, this is what I know works. I can teach you everything about my business, how you could set up your business the same way. I'm very confident that it would work for you if you did all these steps because I'm doing it. I know it's working. That type of thing. So if you go from that perspective, I think those type of people are a lot more successful.
Yeah. What's the biggest piece of land you've ever bought?
656 acres.
656 acres. Holy moly. Yeah. What side of the world was that in?
It was in North Carolina. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Could I ask some details about that? Like,
sure. Yeah. Let's break it down. That cost $315,000.
Okay. What did you sell it for?
$595,000.
What was your acquisition cost, like in terms of like mailers and driving back and forth and drones and all that?
Yeah. On each deal, as far as our direct mail costs go, we average, last year was a little bit less, but this year it's about $3,000 per deal. You know, if we take all the mail that we sent out and kind of figured out how much that costs us and then break it down by the number of properties we bought, it's about $3,000 per property is that kind of overset head. You know, and then it depends on the property and everything, but a lot of times we're paying $200 to $400 for the photography. We have some other due diligence things that we order, which are relatively minimal, you know, and then the closing, you know, it depends on if there's back property taxes that we're paying or whatever we worked out in the deal. It might be $1,000 or $2,000, you know, transaction costs that we pay on the acquisition side.
Sure. So it's not quite a 100% return on the money. Right.
Not on that one.
But a huge, that's a really great win. That's a
lot of money. That was an interesting one in itself. Like in this business, you can either buy them yourself, like with your own money, or there are people out there who are kind of the money partners that they will step in, they'll put all the money, but then you split the deal with them.
Yeah.
I've done, you know, almost 100 deals at this point. And I've only done two partner deals, and that was one of them because it was $315,000 at the purchase price. But so anyhow, at the end of the day, me and a partner, the partner wired the money to close the deal. We were partners on the deal, so I managed all the marketing with the broker and kind of made sure it got sold, and then we split the profit. So I didn't put it was a very good deal for me, and it was a very good deal for him as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was something like $115,000 or something like that we generated from it. And I didn't even put any money out of pocket.
Yeah. And then your half of that was, you know, 60.
Well, that was my half.
Yeah. Obviously I don't know how to do math.
Yeah. I mean, but it was a very good chunk of change, and, you know, it was, you know, he profited that much as well. And so it was, and you know, it was, I don't know, 4 month hold time, something like that. So it took a little longer to sell, bigger property.
Yeah.
But we started a little higher and then kind of worked our way down, reduced the price until we
Was that a buyer? That's obviously zoned a large agricultural track.
Yeah. Okay. It's just kind of a large, it's just kind of an agricultural recreational type property. I'm sure you could build many homes on the property. 650 acres is just like immensely large. It's hard to even get that perspective, you know, until you're actually at a property and you're like, okay, this is what 1,000 acres looks like, you know, just
it, blows it's your mind, remarkable. You know? And you're in California, so you guys live in, you know, like how big is your how big is your land in where you guys live? Like,
yeah, well, we've got a home in you know, North County, San Diego, which is kind of like 10 miles from the ocean by the way the bird flies. So we've got 4 acres there.
Okay, cool.
We're trying to relocate towards the beach, so we're actually renting a home at the beach before until we can find what we want to buy.
Yeah.
So the one we're on right now, I mean, it's a great spot. I'm looking at the ocean right in front of me, but it's, I don't know, it's probably 5,000 square foot lot, you know, which is, you know,
it's tiny.
An eighth of an acre or something like that. So
California is so unique in how they do real estate, but you're looking at the outside doing, looking at the ocean while doing podcasts. Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Not too bad.
Not too bad. Do you surf?
No, no, I need to learn though, because I watch all the surfers right out my window. But you know, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so we didn't have a lot of waves there.
Got it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're gonna need a wetsuit because it's that water's chilly. West Coast water's chilly. Good waves, chilly.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Hey, so many other questions that I have, but like, what I want to do is give you an opportunity for people in the audience who are like, I want to do a deal with you. Like, I don't know what it looks like, whether I'm giving you some of my money and, you know, like I'll split a deal with you, or I want to find deals. Like, there's people out there who want to do deals with you. I just know it. What's a good place for them to connect with you and do a deal?
Yeah. Turningprofit.com. Okay. So just go to there, and there's, all of our ways to connect with us, email, social media, all those things will be on there, and reach out. You know, I love hearing from people. And And please do reach out if you want to partner or do a deal together. That would be great.
Cool. Pete, there's probably a question I should have asked you during this interview, but I screwed up and I'm like, I chased some rabbits down some trails. What questions should I have asked you during this interview?
You might have asked me a variation of this, but I like the question, like, what is it that you like about the land business?
Sure.
And for me, especially in an environment that where we're in, where, you know, we don't really know where the market's going. You hear people talking about it's going to crash, and you hear people saying that it's not going to crash, all this kind of stuff. I really like the aspect of the business that it's based off of really short term holds. So it allows us to pivot quickly. So if the market is starting to go down, you know, we can adjust our purchase prices accordingly. Like, we can say, okay, I need to be more aggressive on our purchase prices, or I'm not going to do it. Yeah. So that gives it more protection, and you can kind of, you get a real good pulse on the market where you need to be. So that's the thing I like about it most, at least right now.
I got to ask a few questions. I said that was going to be the last question. I screwed up. We got more questions there, Pete. How many acres are currently in holding pattern waiting to be sold?
I'd have to check my spreadsheet, but as far as acres go, probably 400 to 500 acres, something like that.
Super cool.
It's like a bunch of different properties, you know, could be 10 acre property. It could be a 50 acre property, you know? So it's kind of, mix and match, I guess.
Yeah. Do you guys have them like marked out, like on a Google map or something like that, where you could kind of like pinpoint to all the properties you've ever bought?
I should do that, but no, that's a good idea.
Thanks, man. Yeah. When we were doing, land stuff, I printed out this huge map on the wall, and we put pins in to kind of like show like the impact and track that we did. It was fun, but it was appealing to me. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, that would be cool. I'm not much of an artist or visual type person, I guess. So I need to hire someone to do that. But I like the idea. I think it'd be cool to visualize. So.
Yeah. Cool. Pete, you're awesome, man. I can't wait for you guys to do your podcast show. You're going to have so much fun. And I've got some friends that I'll connect you with that, you know, can help you guys share your message. So thanks for coming on today's show, dude. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Josh. It's a great time and love the conversation. And maybe we can do it again someday.
Yeah, let's do some deals. Fellow deal makers in the audience, as always, reach out to our guests. Just say thank you. Thank you for sharing your ideas, your business model, like opening up the books and the kimonos to kind of show like, here's how we do it. And that's the purpose of the Deal Scout. Reach out to them, find a way to do a deal. If you would like to do the same and like to come on the show, head over to thedealscout.com, fill out a quick form, and maybe we'll get you on the show next. Love you guys, and we'll talk to you on the next episode. Bye, everybody.